Thank you, Deborah. Well, my task and privilege this morning is to try to talk to you about my home group. My son Larry did a pretty good job of describing it, so I really haven't got anything to say. It'll be a cold day in hell when that happens, to tell you that. I want to share something with you that's really important for me to share with you, is that this is the first Sunday morning in 40 years that I haven't had to follow my sponsor at this podium at the marathon. And it's kind of tough, really, because he was about the closest thing I ever had to a brother in my life. He never really ever sponsored me. He just showed me what to do, and I followed him. And he was my sponsor for 38 years after Norm died. And I'm still having a tough time going to my home group on Wednesday night, because I sat alongside of him for 38 years in a home group. I met him at the parking lot, rain or shine, took him out of the car, handed him a cup of coffee, and helped him into the meeting. And, well, I just miss him, but I'm glad you're all here, because there's a number of you that I'm just crazy about sitting around here in this room. And great members of my group. Both these ladies who read to you this morning are solid members of my home group, which is the Bellflower Big Book group. And Tina has been with me for 35 years plus in our group. And so, Deborah, 21. You know, I had that same thing happen to me. It was a newcomer in our group greeting line when I was secretary the last time. I go to the greeting, I saw this little gal, her name was Mary. And so, you know, she's what's typical young person today, you know, she had one of them trick suits on. And most of you don't know what a trick suit is, but now it's kind of fashionable for the ladies to wear them. And she had every orifice in her head had a piece of jewelry in it. I mean, she'd shake her head, she'd rattle her. She didn't get near any type of a magnet at all. And so I saw her one night, and I walked through her, and I said, "Hi, my name's Johnny. Who are you?" She said, "I'm Mary." And I said, "Well, welcome, Mary." She said, "Yeah, this is my first day, and I'm here." I said, "Well, you're welcome here, honey. We like people like you." And she went on. I went on about my business, and the following week, I went by and stopped Mary standing there still in her same attire. And I said, "Welcome, Mary. Now you have a week." She said, "No, 8 days. So I get the same type of guff from newcomers that I get from old-timers in our group. But I want to tell you, don't ever, ever short anybody a day of their time here. We say we're not proud or guilty or selfish, but boy, we do cover that. My sponsor, Norm, used to say, "I tell you how long I've been sober, because you never know around here now. We might be starting a retirement program, and I want to get my share of it." But it is nice. I've been a member of our fellowship since June 4th, 1961, when I walked out of the penitentiary. I'd been in studying Alcoholics Anonymous or reading the book for 2 years while I was in the penitentiary, which is kind of an isolated thing. But that's not this fellowship. That was my first home group in the state penitentiary. But I walked out of that penitentiary a long time ago, and I've been, as our sponsor used to say, safe and sane and sober from that day to this day, and before I even got here. But I'm going to talk to you about my home group, because I've always been affiliated with an active, participating group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been a member of the Pacific Group for 38 years, but I've been going there since I got sober. And the last 38 years of my life in the Pacific Group were doing what I told you that I do. And he helped. Matter of fact, he instigated my desire to start that group sitting at a breakfast table in Little Rock, Arkansas. Almost 50 years ago, we were sitting there. And I was going to participation meetings, which I really don't care for. And I have a reason about that. I never have been able to hear anything in a participation meeting because I'm always waiting to say something when they call on me. That's why you go to participation meeting, so they'll talk. And I sit there and think about what I'm going to say all the time when they call on me. And then if they don't call on me when I'm on the way home, I'm pissed off anyhow, for God's sake. And so my town of Long Beach wasn't very good. Had a couple of speaker meetings, but I don't know, I just wasn't comfortable with that. I was comfortable on Tuesday nights when a couple of guys and I got in the car and drove down to go over to Ohio Street. A lot of you don't remember when the meetings were at Ohio Street. And we sit in this meeting, and there was a feeling in that meeting that I didn't feel in other places. There was kind of a thing that you don't find a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody looked like something had happened to them. They didn't sit around half undressed in meetings. And they paid attention when the speaker was talking. And there always seemed to be a decent speaker speaking there. And of course, Clancy was there. And you know, we were friends because we traveled all over the world together by that time. And we were sitting having breakfast in Little Rock, Arkansas, 40, 50 years ago. And I was telling him of my dilemma, you know, how I got in the car on Tuesday with three or four guys and we drove the Pacific Group, and there was an ease and comfort there and the discipline and the structure that I'd felt in the penitentiary or in the street gang that I belonged to for almost 20 years. And he said, I can't find anything like that in Long Beach. And he said, why don't you do what I did? And I said, what's that? He said, start your own group. So basically, Clancy Emerson was the founder of two groups, the Pacific Group and the Belvoir Big Book Group. I was just a humble servant who just wandered around with it. And we started that meeting 49 years ago, with 17 people. And last Monday night, after the pandemic, there were 300 or 400 people sitting in that room, and 300 or 400 on that Zoom thing. And to the best of our ability, the people who've been there with me, like I said, Tina's been there with me for 35 years, and a lot of other ones. They've kept the customs and the discipline and the messages of Alcoholics Anonymous alive and well. And you know, I've been the chairman for all these many years. That means I get to put the chairs away every Monday night. And every Monday night, some newcomer will come by as I'm still putting chairs away, although I'm not quite as physically able to do it. And he say to me, you started this meeting, you've been sober over 60 years, and you still have to put the chairs away? And I said, no, son. I don't have to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I get to do a lot of things here because of the grace of God and the power of this program that has kept me alive and well for all these many years. And we started with 47 years, with 17 people in our meeting. And it's been a wonderful thing to watch. The book has a statement that I like to watch this fellowship grow up around you, an experience you must not miss. And I sat in the same chair I've sat in the first meeting that we had there every night, every Monday night. And I still get the same feeling that I got the first night I sat in that meeting 49 years ago. The same feeling I got on Wednesday night when I opened the car door and gave my sponsor a cup of coffee and walked into the meeting with him. I've been a blessed man by the people in Alcoholics Anonymous who have shown me how to be a better servant in Alcoholics Anonymous. Deborah read it when she read the traditions. Our leaders are but trusted servants. Nobody governs around here, we're just servants. Some people get a little out of it sometimes, I think, in New York, but I don't really judge them. I just report the fact to you. It's my opinion on it, though. That's the thing of it, because I love this fellowship so much. Because it hasn't just got me sober. It pulled me out of the very depths of hell that I had put me into, because I never knew anything like this in my life. I have a book that a guy that I sponsor carried to the Pacific Group on a Wednesday night a couple of weeks ago and signed it, very famous man. And I'm reading his life story. Well, it couldn't be mine because mine's in this room where it belongs. Because I'm not expecting to do any brain surgery the next 15 minutes on emergency. And I forgot where I was at. My name's Johnny and I'm an alcoholic. I got my whole train of thoughts. But where was I, Larry? You keep reminding me. Huh? Oh, well. Huh? Oh, Danny's book, yeah. And I tell you, it was an experience for me to read that book and see me in every chapter and mention in every chapter. And reflect my entire life. I never have heard my story in its entirety until I read that story in the book of that man. The prisons, things that happen in prison, the street gangs, the family that you come from, everything. And it just, what you people have done for me when you came to me on the fourth day of November 1959, we drove 100 miles up there. Larry talked about it. I didn't have the slightest idea what you were doing. Not the slightest idea. But I knew, and what I've come to understand, and that was the beginning of the prayer that I made on my deathbed in the Los Angeles County Jail 3 or 4 years before that. And I come from that 3 or 4 years that I lived in this hell spot where I was at, that I had taken this thing too far, way too far, and that there was, God had turned it back completely on me, and that I was going to burn in hell for the rest of my eternity, as my grandmother told me I was going to do. And I didn't understand that. I couldn't, and if you're new here this morning, what you may not realize for a period of time, because it took me 3 years to understand and 60-some years sober to recognize that prayer I made in my deathbed in the county jail when a doctor pronounced me going to die. Oh, God, help me, that simple little prayer. I didn't recognize my grandmother's prayer for her little fair-haired boy to sit in church with her when he was a child. I didn't recognize any about this prayer, but the beginning of the answer to that prayer was the day you found me sitting in that penitentiary. You see, I didn't come looking for you. There was something about you as you walked across that yard in that penitentiary that I did something that I would have sworn I would have never done. I got up and walked away from my righteous partners and followed you into a building, just like I did this morning. Only I followed you in here this morning after I spent some time with some members of my home group, a couple of guys that I sponsor, and a couple of great band babies of mine. I didn't understand that. And my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was November the 4th, 1959. And Larry talked about a complete surrender without even knowing it. I didn't know. That day, something happened to me because I haven't had a drink of alcohol or a mood-altering chemical in my system or even a conscious thought or desire to take a drink of alcohol. And I didn't understand of the condition that I was in that deathbed in the Los Angeles County Jail, that I had absolutely reached out for the first time in my life to the only thing that would transform a guy like me from a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot strapped up in a straitjacket somewhere in an insane asylum is a God. The book Alcoholics Anonymous is very specific about talking about God freely here, very freely. And I know as well as I'm standing here that without this powerful God forgiving me of my sins and allowing me to live peacefully and comfortably and joyously with you and countless others, I know there has to be a God. As I sit on a Wednesday night for 38 years with my sponsor alongside of me and listen to him, whatever, I'll tell you a little story about this. One year, Clancy went to New Zealand and he talked for 5 different cities in 5 days. And he thought that I had enough energy to do the same thing, so the following year I went to New Zealand and talked for 5 days. And I never will forget that my host, on the morning, the last morning of the talk I was in, he said to me, I said, how are you doing? And he said, well, I haven't slept a wink. I had 4 double hot shots of coffee, and I couldn't sleep all night long. And I said, well, what's wrong with you? And he said, well, you don't understand. Clancy was here last year. And when he got up to talk, he said, he looked down at me and said, God, I hope you stay awake through my talk like you didn't for those other people. And he looked at me and he says, and everybody tells me you're worse than he is. And I looked at him real seriously and I gave him an antidote. I said, don't you understand something? He said, what? And I said, I sit alongside of Clancy every Wednesday night. And sometimes I have to wake him up because his snoring bothers me. If I'd have given that guy $1 million, he would have been happy as a lark. He danced all the way to the airport the next morning singing songs of joy. But you see, above everything that I found sitting in that chair is that basic human being who I loved unconditionally. And no matter what he did, it was all right with me. I had that love for the first time in my life with my Papa Chuck. I had that unconditional love. And I have it for Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't have to be perfect for me to love it, and it isn't. It's just Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group is there. That's why I think it's some type of a great privilege to be able to serve something as good and wonderful and useless as a home group or Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I've never taken anything that. I said the last 2 years I was in the penitentiary after I tried to pull steps into my life, if you will give me the great privilege of coming and sitting in your meeting, I'll do anything you ask me to do. I have kept that vow above all other vows that I have ever made. I'm not always doing it happily and joyously and free. Sometimes I don't want to go anywhere. Sometimes I just want to pull up my little place somewhere and just let somebody else do it. But a commitment is what I learned from Clancy more than anything. Commitment to my home group, because, you know, the last couple of years of his life, you know, I had to help him get around. The last time we were together at the Southern California Convention, I wheeled him all over the place in a wheelchair. I went to his room, put him in a chair, and wheeled him around all weekend. I did the same thing to my Papa Chuck in his last roundup. And I'm not taking volunteers to push me around in my wheelchair, I'll tell you that. You know, but they'd be standing in line, I know, because I feel loved in Alcoholics Anonymous. I never felt it in my life before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know what those people brought to that penitentiary in 1959. I had no concept of it. I'm so selfish and self-centered, I had destroyed everything in my life and everybody in my life. Alcohol didn't do it, I did it. You see, I'm the one that did everything. I'm the one who committed the atrocities in that street gang for all those years and in the penitentiary. You know, I'm the guy that did it. I'm the guy that drank the whiskey. I'm the guy that shot the dope. I'm the guy that was responsible for the death of my 17-year-old brother in 1951. I'm responsible for destroying my mother's soul. Not only did I responsible for her baby boy, but her middle son was an absolute horror to be around. And I didn't understand all that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I never understood it when I felt the love of my first sponsor, Norm, in his ways. You know, I just didn't understand a lot of things. I knew about discipline, and I knew about keep doing what I say when I said to do it. I learned that in the street gangs in juvenile hall in 1942. But what has been a passion in my life, and this is the thing that I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the thing I love about sitting in my home group on Monday night. I can sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on Monday night or Wednesday night. And we don't have to have the world's greatest speakers. Sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. I can sit there and I wait for this to happen in our meeting. In our Monday night meeting, we have people come walking down the hall to take chips for 30 days, 90 days, 6 months. And that's not my joy. I see it and I understand it. It's the beginning of this. I watch people from our home group dressed up like something has transformed them. And I watch them get up on a podium after they've blown out the candles on their cape. And what I see is not somebody who's been sober for a period of time. I watched Mary in that transformation. I watch God's handiwork in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I go to meetings. That's what a home group is to me. The people who go to it have the respect of it. The people who go there want to serve it. The people who don't want to serve it make themselves known at the business meetings. I know. I just thought I'd have to get that in. We just had a business meeting. It's always the same people. It's never different. Most of the people in our Monday night meeting are servants. They serve that meeting. They come dressed at least decently. I'll tell you a little story about what made me do that. When I was new, I didn't drive a car because I didn't have a driver's license. It had been suspended for the rest of my natural life, which is a long, long time when you're 30 years old. And I had to call Norm up every once in a while to say, I know you're speaking down here, Norm, like any other sniveling little wimp. Norm, will you come by and pick me up? We need to go to a meeting. If you ever need to go to a meeting, you're in trouble. You should want to go to meetings to keep you out of trouble. And so it was a hot July night. If I lived to be 100 years old, I'll never forget this. And so, not knowing anything about discipline or structure or any of that kind of stuff, I put on my best tank top, my best pair of shorts, and I think I might have had a new pair of flip-flops. I slicked my hair back, put a cap on, had my sunglasses, and Norm drove up, took one look at me, and drove off. I couldn't wait till 11 or 12 o'clock to call him. You new people, good time to check how sincere your sponsor is. Call him at midnight. Don't call me. Call there. And when I called him at midnight and complained to him about how he was cruel and left me standing on the street corner, and he said, Johnny, would you go to church dressed like that? And I said, no, I wouldn't. He says, you ain't going to my church dressed like that either. See, this is hollow ground here. Giants of Alcoholics Anonymous have sat in this meeting. People who formed my life have sat in this meeting. This meeting was started right after the International Convention in Montreal, a long time ago. It's a thing that's carried over with me. I don't allow the people that I sponsor to wear shorts to meetings because they have to show the newcomer some degree of respect that if something has happened. That's what my sponsor and my home group has taught me. That I have to show any little bit of concern, of some type of a change for the attraction of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what I learned sitting in my home group. That's what I said, watching them people mount that rostrum on Monday night in their dress. Girls with dresses on and makeup on. And it's just a hollow place to be. People's lives have been transformed here by simple little things. That message that Norm left me that day, standing on the street corner, irritated me. And he didn't have the slightest idea that I have hurt people far, far worse than that for just looking at me cross-eyed. And I didn't understand why I didn't hit him the next time I saw him, because I could carry a grudge for years before I put it into operation. The little simple things in Alcoholics Anonymous that you've shown me and you have taught me by your example has molded me to what I am today. It is an amazing thing. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. For years and years and years, I got up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and drove to wherever this thing was to fulfill my condition of standing behind my sponsor and my father as I shared this memorial. No, this is not the memorial. That's coming up later. And I don't know. I'll tell you. I'm going to tell you something about my sponsor that a lot of people don't know, and a lot of you who saw him from afar have no concept of. A man with a heart as big as this room. A man as big as his heart. His heart was as big as the world, bigger than you could possibly ever comprehend if you didn't know him that well. When I got into a business deal and closed the business, I owed a lot of money, and I went down to him and talked to him about it. And he said, he listened to my plea, and he said, "Well, it could be worse, Johnny." And I said, "Why is that?" He said, "It could be me that owes the money." And, you know, I didn't know what to say. And then he said, "But you know what? I've saved some money up from the college fund for my kids, and you're more than welcome to it. No strings attached." See, a lot of people never got to see that in Clancy because they stood far from him and only watched him and listened to him from time to time. I got to see it more than once, more than twice, every time I sat near him. My great love for him was that I found out he was a human being, you know, not some person that was beyond reach. It's the same thing for this marathon meeting. I love this marathon meeting because from the beginning I stood as third person from the end behind Clancy and his sponsor, Chuck Chamberlain, who was the only father I've ever known. So I want to thank you very much, the people who put this on, the committee that puts this Alcoholics Anonymous thing on, and opens the door for tongue-chewing, babbling idiots like me to come in and sit down and spend a peaceful Sunday morning surrounded by the people that I love and the memories of the one I knew I was resting well in heaven and looking down on us. So thank you very much for all coming. Thank you all very much for sitting and listening to my memories of Alcoholics Anonymous and the great love I have for you. I got it because of my love for everybody else. And don't ever go to some of this babble that's talked about. I had to learn me, love me before I could love you. No, I've never loved me. Never. I knew I was rotten from the core, so I couldn't love me or anybody else. But I learned to love you a long, long time ago. And today it burns even hotter and brighter and deeper than anything I've ever experienced in my life. So I'm going to close this thing the way my papa used to close his talk. I love you, and there ain't a damn thing you can do about it. Thank you very much.